Hello and welcome to the OneTrust Talks Tech podcast. This is episode number 43, recorded on June 11th, 2024. My name is Roger Dean and I work on the product team here at OneTrust and I'm the host of this podcast. In today's episode, we're going to talk to Justin Maxwell, who is on the product team and was the product manager for the new tenant copy feature that was just released as public preview in the spring 2024 release. This is a really exciting feature that I know a lot of people are looking forward to, so it'll be great to get more information from Justin. As always, just a quick reminder that this podcast reflects OneTrust's current expectations for product capabilities. Be advised that dates and features may be subject to change and should not be relied upon when making purchasing decisions. All right, now I'd like to welcome Justin Maxwell, who's a senior product manager here at OneTrust, to the podcast. Welcome, Justin.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Thanks for coming on so much. This is really a cool feature that I know a lot of people are excited about. So let's talk about the sandbox creation. Like, why did we build this and kind of what's different about it from the UAT environments? And what are the main use cases that we made this for and you expect customers to use it for?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think that's probably the top question that we get is, you know, my organization is already using a UAT account. You know, what's the purpose of the sandboxes? Why would I want to migrate to the sandbox? And there's a couple of things. The first one is what we wanted to target as a part of our sandbox solution was this link between production and testing. And so one of the struggles that a lot of our customers have faced is UAT is great for testing configuration data, but it's totally siloed from what I actually have in production. And so when it comes time for me to be able to do a migration from my UAT to production, there's this like very, very manual process that I have to go through where mainly like GUIDs and unique identifiers and names of objects that are unique all have to be remapped whenever I push my data to production. And so the first big benefit of sandboxes is that whenever a sandbox is created, the link of your objects is already mapped from production to that newly created sandbox. And so you don't have to worry about, you know, trying to create this realignment between production and sandbox. It's already been done for you.
No, I was gonna say, yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I guess maybe now would be a good time just to clarify that UAT tenants that customers have are in a completely separate environment, meaning they're in a completely different infrastructure in our cloud than the production is. It's a totally different environment. Whereas a sandbox tenant is actually in exactly the same environment, same services, everything, same databases, everything as the production. So that allows us to, I guess, do what you're talking about, where when we do create that sandbox, it's much easier to copy over all of that information. And also ensures that the sandbox is on the same version as the production, which I know is also a problem where the UAT may or may not be on the same version as the production.
Yeah, absolutely. That's totally correct. Okay. And that's one of the biggest benefits of the sandboxes, right, is that you maintain the consistency and what you're going to expect to see in production is also going to be available for you in that sandbox.
Yeah, that's really cool. And so you were saying that, like, making this copy over all of that stuff is already set up. What are some of the, other than just obviously I'm going to make this copy of my production tenant over there and so I can test stuff. Is that the main use case that we're looking at, or what are some other use cases that you would see?
Yeah, certainly. I would say that's probably the top use case. One of the underlying use cases that I think is probably overlooked, especially when we're pitching this, is the self-service management of these sandboxes. And so this is really something that was obvious to us as a product team, but as we were getting this in front of customers, we didn't realize how much of a pain point it is whenever our customers are trying to, you know, do some sort of admin control or even just get like a UAT created, you know, they have to work with either our professional service resources or reach out to their account executive. And it is a process to get a new UAT spun up.
Yeah, it takes like 3 weeks or something, even once you get on the schedule to have that your production environment copied over to a UAT. And it doesn't mean that's once you get on the schedule, and it may take much more longer than that once you get on the schedule. So it is a big process.
Yeah. Yeah, and that kind of leads to one of the other things that I wanted to call out that I think is a big benefit is something that when we were doing some research and some internal exploration on this and working with our CloudOps team to understand what some of their pain points are on copying data in a process that's usually referred to as like just traditional tenant copy today. About 70% of our CloudOps cases are just for that. Customers want to copy data from production to UAT to keep alignment between the two siloed accounts. And just to get into that queue could take a few months. And then once you get in the queue, it's anywhere from a 2 to 3 day process for the actual copying to take place. And wow. So a lot of manual effort on both the customer side, but even on with our internal teams.
Wow. Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. So once you've actually created a UAT, then obviously customers are going to want to keep it up to date with configurations and things that are in production. But that could take, like you said, months to get on the calendar and then still a few days to get that copy done. So, yeah, this is a huge difference in time savings from both sides. Now, one of the questions that I get all the time, and I'm really excited about this. In fact, I used it the other day when I was getting ready to make the demos for the feature overviews for the spring release, was what gets copied and what doesn't. So from my production environment, I have all my users, I have all of my integrations, I have all of my assessments configured, templates set up, all that stuff, and workflows and everything. What actually gets copied over from production and then what is not copied?
Yeah, great question. And so you already touched on a couple of those things, and I'll reiterate. One of the big ones is user data. So user data is the big one, because when we were kind of designing our solution for sandboxes, we wanted it to be secure in the sense that we didn't want to over-provision people who could access the sandbox, but we also didn't want to make it a headache to actually provision users to that sandbox. So there's a very fine line that we kind of have to meet there. And we also understand that there is a lot of organizations have a process for user provisioning that they don't really get a chance to test. In UAT, they just typically go straight to production to do that. And so we also wanted to try to build in the possibility of being able to do user provisioning testing in the sandbox. And so what we're doing with users specifically, I'll touch on that as the piece of data that we copy first, is we're copying your entire user list over from production to the sandbox whenever the sandbox is created, but then deactivating all of the users except for the sandbox admin, which is today it's the user who creates the sandbox. Then what that user can do is they can go in and simply just reactivate those users. And so if you have a handful of users that you want to have access to your sandbox, you don't really need your entire organization who has access to production to go into the sandbox to do testing. Really simple process to just go in, reactivate those users. You can also set up a separate SSO configuration than what you have in production. And so if you want to test SSO config before you move it into production, you could do that in your sandbox.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the first thing that I think is really neat about sandboxes. As far as the rest of the data that's being copied, we are copying configuration data. And so to put some definition behind that, because configuration data might mean something different to anyone, that is going to be things like templates, preference centers, collection points, integration workflows, even the credentials and integrations. And so traditionally, configuration data can almost be considered like data that your organization would use to collect transactional data. And so transactional data might be like DSAR requests. Even if you're looking like internally at the tenant itself, it's audit data. It's things that are traditionally specific to an instance or to the tenant, not the process. And so we're copying a lot of that process data.
I got it. So I've been trying to figure out how to describe this, and I think you described it perfectly there with transactional data. So for example, you know, we would copy the template and the assessment, but we wouldn't ever copy any of the responses to the assessment or any of that other transactional data that someone else has done, probably other than the administrator of the OneTrust environment. That protects all of that information that is in there that is transactional that people have submitted, whether it's, you know, like DSAR requests or whatever, or responded to assessments or whatever, then that is not copied over the sandbox. which actually brings up another question in that, like, is there anything that's not copied that is going to cause someone trouble when they try and simulate their production environment? So, you know, like I wanted to test out this new feature. I wanted this public preview feature. I want to turn it on in my sandbox, but it requires that it has transactional data for that feature to really show its value. Do you see that being an issue? And maybe, like, is that a case where they would just have to put in some sample data just to see what it's like on a very small use case basis?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's really the intention, is that customers will take ownership of what is going to be required to test that configuration data. And so you would actually, you know, seed some sample data. Something that we've talked about that's going to be on our long-term roadmap is maybe having an option that we can pre-seed some of that data for you. So it's essentially just dummy data, mm-hmm. right? If you don't want to spend the time to go in and maybe add some filler inventory objects or something, right? We could pre-seed some of that on your behalf. But yeah, you're absolutely right. That's the expectation, is that customers add some of that transactional data themselves, right? If you take the DSTAR example, that, you know, if you have a work stream or something that you want to test your DSTAR workflows, right, then you would have to create some of those requests prior to being
okay.
able to test.
Makes sense. So this will be a shameless plug for Hands-On Labs, but we actually do that function now with Hands-On Labs, because when someone starts a lab, we create a brand new tenant that has no data in it. And depending on what lab it is, we will populate it with some data through using APIs. Like if I'm doing an assessment lab and I need to have four different approvers, you know, approver 1, 2, 3, and 4, we don't want the user to spend time actually creating those users. So we go ahead and, using APIs, we'll populate those users that are needed for the lab. So yeah, it is something that we're already doing with labs, but it sounds like that would be a good option, like to pre-populate, you know, if I'm wanting to do DSARs, pre-populate some random anonymous DSAR requests or something in the system. So that'd be cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The other question I get a lot, and that was part two of the one question. The other question I get a lot is, how many can I have, and how much money are they going to cost? And maybe we don't know the answer to the second or the first, but I'd be love to get your insight on those.
Yeah. That is in flight. We will definitely be publishing that as we finalize some of those details internally. There isn't a limit right now from a product side, right?
Yeah.
And so there will be a SKU associated to sandboxes that we know. So you'll have an opportunity to purchase more of these. So I'll give you some use cases that when meeting with customers and talking with people that we've heard, is that, you know, because of the difficulties and like being able to spin up a UAT, it's just not worth it to customers, right? To have to like try and maintain multiple of these UAT instances. The benefit of sandboxes is that they can be so easily provisioned that now it's like, okay, you know, maybe we have different programs being launched across, you know, production. Well, we want to silo some of our testing into different sandboxes. And so maybe you've got a privacy use case, maybe you've got a GRC use case. You could have different sandboxes to do that. And so that kind of gives some reasoning behind us allowing our users to create multiple sandboxes. So it will be possible. We haven't discussed any limits or maxing it out. I think that's something that we'll just monitor user behavior over time. Mm-hmm. And we will, of course, have controls in place. And we do have controls in place to set, you know, to check for if you've got a sandbox or something that maybe you haven't logged into in X amount of time.
Right.
It's not like that sandbox is just going to be accessible for forever. But we will allow users to create multiple of these. They will be associated to a SKU, and so we want to be sure that our barrier to entry is realistic, right? This is kind of table stakes for our customers, and mm-hmm. we understand that. And so, we also want to cover costs, right?
Right.
So, So as we get closer to GA, we will make public what our pricing strategy is going to be for these, but it will be in line with what you would see for UAT, or even priced better, right?
Okay.
Because we think there's going to be a lot more benefit to sandboxes.
Right. And we're not having to stand up an entirely new environment, although there is infrastructure costs with doing that. One more question, and then we can wrap it up. The time it takes. Now, when I did this, I had a very, very small tenant, really basically no data in it. It just was a really small a couple assessments or whatever. And it really didn't take that long at all, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, 20 minutes at max, I don't remember exactly, to copy, to create the sandbox and be up and ready to use. What have you seen in your testing with small, medium, large tenants for copies, for creations to take?
Yeah, great question. Small tenants, like you mentioned, you know, you could expect just a few minutes, probably under 10 minutes or so. Medium-sized tenants, we've seen, and we classify by the amount of configuration data. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you have a lot of config data in your production tenant that we're trying to copy over, maybe you've got, you know, we've met with customers who have like hundreds of thousands of users, just user data in their tenants, right? And those are more on the extreme side. But if it's a medium-sized tenant, probably an hour to maybe two max. And then for our really, really large tenants, people who are more of the outliers who just have, you know, a tremendous amount of that configuration data, it could take about a day to copy.
Okay.
And those are more extreme use cases. Right. I would say for our average users, about an hour or less.
Yeah,
is what
that's
expect.
A lot better than 3 or 4 months waiting and then a couple days actually doing. Yeah. So it's, anything less than that's going to be a win. So the feature's now in public preview, meaning that if you want to get access to this, you need to contact your customer success manager or whomever to have them turn this on in your environment. And again, since this is in the same environment, you don't need to go to somewhere else. And then you can have access to this. I just recorded a video for this that will be released in the next day or two on the website that goes over the demo of how to actually do this and the value it has. So I think it's going to be hugely popular. I know every customer I've talked to has really looked forward to getting this. So thank you so much, Justin, for putting this together and also for coming on the podcast. Anything else you'd like to, that I didn't ask you about? I ask you a lot. Anything else I didn't ask you about or you wanted to cover before we wrap it up?
The one thing I will touch on as well is the sandbox's refresh capabilities.
Oh, I forgot about that.
A big benefit.
Yeah,
I think that's a big benefit as well with the sandboxes, and it's something that we've gotten a lot of feedback on from our customers is the ability to refresh the sandbox. And so, like, one of the biggest use cases I talked a little bit about, you know, what's happening with CloudOps. Is customers want to keep their UAT environments in line with what they have in production. And in a lot of cases, it's like close to impossible to do that, right? Like, you know, your UAT gets just so out of whack that, you know, it's like whenever it comes time for you to actually migrate configuration data from UAT to production, there's a lot of remapping that has to be done, and it can be very, very difficult. And so, especially when you talk about like organization structure and everything. And so, one of the benefits of sandboxes is that we have introduced refresh capabilities. And so if you ever say, hey, look, like we've been doing a lot of testing in UAT, we're ready for it to be back in line with, in your sandbox, and we're ready for it to be back in line with production. You can just go directly into the sandbox from your production account and click refresh, and it'll kick off the process to essentially clear out all of the sandbox data and then remap everything from production back into that sandbox data.
Yeah, makes sense. That's really cool to be able to do that. Or you've made changes in production or whatever, and you want the sandbox to now reflect those versus what it was when you last did it. And I guess the last thing we should cover is that you also have the ability to delete the sandbox. So the interesting, I didn't realize this until I actually went through and did it, is that once you click delete, it's going to put it in a basically pending delete state. And it'll be there for 5 days, which in essence will allow you as a customer to go notify everyone that was using the sandbox that, hey, we're going to delete this. So you need to get out and get done with it. Is that kind of why that was done that way?
Yeah, 100%. Kind of a weird decision, you know, that we get asked about a lot. But it was strategic, right? When you talk about deleting a tenant, you know, that's a big process. And especially when you have a lot of users who might have access to that sandbox, you should have controls in place to try and mitigate as much risk as you can. And so whenever you go in to actually delete the sandbox, it'll be marked with that pending deletion status. You'll have 5 days that any site admin in production could go in and actually withdraw that pending deletion status, and it'll bring the sandbox back online. And so it's kind of just a prevention method. We don't want to give one user too much power. And so that's the reasoning behind
that. Right. Yeah, makes sense. So that's a really cool feature to have in there as well. Justin, thank you so much for coming on. This is amazing. I know a lot of people are going to be really happy to see this. If you want to take advantage of this public preview, like I said, just contact your OneTrust account representative or customer success manager, and they can get it turned on for you in your environment. So take advantage of that. Thanks again, Justin, and I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Thanks so much for Justin Maxwell coming on and getting all this great information on the sandbox creation tenant copy functionality that was just been released. If you have any feedback, questions, or recommendations, please don't hesitate to contact us by sending an email to podcast@onetrust.com. Next week, we'll be back on Monday, and hopefully we'll have more product managers as well as a overview of the release that's going out this week, which should start rolling out to environments a week from Monday. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.